This is a Dharmanet presentation.
I remember Ajahn Manindo, one of the Ajahns in the Nichaya tradition, was told me a story once. He was going for a walk in New Zealand, and some tough guy, a punk or something like that, comes up to him, is really aggressive, and says to him, "Well, what are you guys on about then?" And he's very, very quick on his feet, and he just said, we're on about not making a problem out of anything." And so he says, "Oh, all right, that sounds pretty good." How does stop them in their tracks? So they're not making a problem out of anything. That would be nice, isn't it? But notice, it's quite a subtly phrased thing, you know, because of course we think things are problems, right? We think problems are things that present themselves to us, right? Whereas what the Buddha invited us to consider with the Four Noble Truths was to think, well, how are you making the problem? It's the second noble truth, is, you know, where's the source of the problem? Where are you making it? Where does it come from? So all kinds of things happen, but then what do you make a problem out of them? When it comes to meditation, one of the very first things that we learn about meditation when we first come to sit is that anything can happen. Any feeling can happen. Any thought, any intention, any plan, any memory. Anything that you can imagine can come to you in your meditation. And it probably will. Sooner or later. So if you think that meditation is, you know, a particular kind of experience, it's a kind of thing that you have to, I'm here having this kind of experience and I need to be over there having that kind of experience, then your meditation is going to be full of frustration. Because the kind of experience that you're having now is always changing. The kind of experience that you are aiming for and that you think that you're aiming for is always changing. I met so many people who, you know, had some good experience in their meditation, and often when people just start out meditating, they fluke it. And they sit down there and for some reason they have a nice, quiet, peaceful meditation, maybe even the first time they see it or just when they're just starting out. And it's like, wow, that's amazing. Now I can just do this. I have this place that's so peaceful and I can go back there whenever I want. And then they come and see me 10 years later, 20 years later, and say, "I've never been back there. I know it's there. I know what that's like. But how can I get back to that place?" Yeah? You can see how people get trapped in their own metaphors. It's not a place. You think of that as a place that you can go to. A place, something that's static. It's not a place. How can I dive into the same current in that river? Would be perhaps a more apt metaphor. And then when you think about that, you realize, well, of course, the river's changing all the time. The Buddha called the mind, he said, a stream of consciousness. So how, since the river's changing all the time, the stream's changing all the time, how can I get back to that same place? Oops, oh, there it goes down, run along the bank to try to catch it. Yeah? That's not how it works. It's not how the mind works. There's no place to go back to. There's no thing to be attained. And there's no there. Right? There is just a function of language. It's just a delusion that we imagine because there's a language. Then it's just a delusion of language. Think about this. One of the most subtle points that the Buddha made, it's a very powerful passage in the Mahayana Sutta. He talks about how this whole round of samsara, suffering and rebirth that we get so tangled up in lifetime after lifetime. This is, and the whole thing is bound up with these constructs which are embodied in our language. What the Buddha called the vachanapato, the past, the present and the future, the there and the then. We're constructing these things. They don't exist. There's no there. There's no then. But these are just useful constructs in language. And we tend to imagine that they're real. Actually, the only thing that's real is here and now. That's all you've ever experienced. When was the last time you experienced a then? You never experienced a then. It's fantasy. We use the word yesterday. When did you ever experience a yesterday? Every day you get up in the morning, check. Okay? Look at the calendar. Yep, it's today again. I've been hoping for a yesterday, but no. All I got was today. When was the last time you looked around and said, yep, I'm there now? No, you're here. You're never there. I'm going to go from here to there. No, you don't go from here to there. You go from here to another here. You take the here with you. You take the now with you when you go. That's all there is. So then we think, how can I get in the present moment? You can't get out of the present moment. It's impossible. All you've ever known for your whole life is the present. Nothing else exists.
But it's the present which is remembering the past. So that in that way the past is alive, isn't it? In your thoughts.
But you're still present, remembering the past. Yeah? It's alright. You're still present. It's like if you're seeing, I can be standing here and I can look in the distance and see the hills and the ocean and so on in the distance. So I can see that there, but my seeing is here. Okay. So what we experience is so from here. Very powerful statement the Buddha made that he was talking in the context of space exploration. The Buddha was really into space exploration. True. He would have been fascinated by the Mars rover and all these things. He said, because there was a story about ascetic with psychic powers who could travel across the universe, the world's first astronaut, Rohitasan. Boom! You are so fast! And he could never reach the end of the world. Very interesting, yeah? They had this concept 2,500 years ago that the world is not something you can reach the boundaries of. The universe is not something you can reach the boundaries of. And so we still haven't reached any boundaries, have we? Still looking for them. And the Buddha said, actually the world rises and passes away inside this very body. This is where the world arises. This is where you experience everything. This, our senses, our eyes, our ears. This is what gives us a location. So if we're sitting in meditation and we're thinking, how can I be present? How can I be here? How can I be now? Any wrong questions? You're already here. You're already now. Stop making a problem out of it. Why is it that we think if we're Buddhist, we think, oh, we should use, right speech, we shouldn't get into arguments and conflicts, we should have loving kindness for everybody and all of these things. We're all going to be good little Buddhists. And then we sit down in meditation and we can't do it to ourselves. I can't be accepting of myself. I can't love myself. I want to change myself. Imagine that. Imagine if you're in some relationship or something like that. Oh yeah, well, I'll love you when you can do these things. First of all, shut up when I want you to shut up. right? Right? Don't talk about topics A, B, C, D, and E because I don't like them. And so on and so on. Yeah, that's a really lovely kind of relationship that is. That's really understanding and compassionate. But that's what we do in our meditation, isn't it? I'm going to sit down and I'm going to have a nice meditation, but I've got a list of demands for my own mind. One, shut up. Two, if you are going to talk, you can't talk about these things. Three, don't feel stuff. Right? Don't feel stuff, because feeling is so unpeaceful.
Yeah.
I want to be peaceful. You can feel peaceful at the feeling, but you can't feel anything else. I only feel nice things. Yeah? Imagine that. Imagine you're in a relationship, and that's the first thing you say to them. Okay, right. You're only allowed to have emotions that I find pleasant. Okay? Otherwise, it's just not on, right? But it's true, isn't it? That's what we do. We sit in meditation. Okay. Oh, I don't want to feel that. Ooh, that's nasty. I'm supposed to be a nice person. Oh, go away. So this is not making a problem out of anything. It's very, very challenging. We're so conditioned to try to change things. Yeah? We're so conditioned to want things to be right. Yeah? You know, like if you've got a nice clean, you know, wooden floor, nice and polished and clean, and you've made everything as nice and shiny and stuff like that, and then somebody walks in with a muddy boot and leaves a muddy boot print on it. Can you just leave it there? Can you not wipe it off? Can you say, oh, it's alright, it's a muddy boot print? I'm not saying you should, I'm just saying you look at that mind state that wants to get in there. As soon as that happens, wants to get in there and do something. Because it's slightly different, right? When there's muddy boot prints on the floor, then they actually will stay there, and you do have to actually wipe them off, right? But in your mind, it's a little bit more subtle than that. Your mind is much more like, because the floor is a very highly artificial environment, right? Whereas mind is a much more organic thing. Yeah, it's much more like, if you think of like a garden or like nature or something like that. And nature has its way of dealing with stuff, doesn't it? Right? If there's something in a garden or a forest or something, if there's some pollution or some rubbish or some weeds or something which you think really shouldn't be there, well, sure, yeah, sometimes you can go in there and clean it up and that make it better. But often, if you just leave it, nature will take care of it. Maybe it'll take time. Right? But there are these processes. Toxins get broken down. Things like weeds come, and we think weeds are bad, but actually weeds have their place in an ecosystem, and sometimes they do something that's, you know, and gradually it will evolve and change. And the mind is like that. The mind is much faster. Right? The mind is much lighter, much more quick to change than an ecosystem. And what you'll find is quite amazing is that most of the time that all of these things will just take care of themselves. Not all the time, and that there will be some times when we need to do something that's a bit more constructive, when we need to sort of positively say, okay, look, we're going to have to develop this and do this in a constructive way and so on. Okay? But most of the time, the most powerful thing we can do is just be aware. And awareness takes patience. Yeah? To know it and not react. Oh, thank you so much. To know it and not try to fix it. To know it and not think that there's something wrong with it. It takes patience and it takes faith. Very, very important. I think faith is one of these most underrated qualities, especially in Buddhism. And also Buddhists are still very neurotic, especially like these like secular Buddhists and stuff like that. Very neurotic about faith. It's terrible, because well, they've all got these traumatized memories of Catholic upbringings and stuff like that, so it's like, oh, please. Okay, it's understandable. But you've got to have a, you've got to get a better relationship with faith. Faith is fine. The problem is just, it's just not blind faith. We're not talking about stupid faith, right? We're talking about intelligent faith. We're talking about reasonable faith. But intelligent faith isn't just like an intellectual acceptance of something. It's an engagement with it. It's a heartfelt response to it. If you really think that this is going to work, not even if you really think of it, that's even the wrong way to put it, you know that this works because you have experienced it. You have found it in your own mind many, many, many times. You have felt some thought or some feeling or some emotion or something, like greed, hatred, delusion, all of these things. You've felt it in your mind, you've seen it, you've known it, and when you're aware of it and you're mindful of it, you've seen it just pass away, dissolve. That's its nature. That's the conditions. You've seen that. And if you've been meditating for any length of time, you've seen that not once, not twice, not even hundreds of times. You've seen it tens of thousands of times. That's the kind of faith that we're talking about. It's not an unreasonable faith. It's, I've experienced this thing so many times. Just have faith. Just have patience. The same thing will happen again. Not because I'm going to make it happen. Not because the Buddha said it's going to happen. Certainly not because Sujata says it's going to happen. But because my experience is that this is what happened. Everything's impermanent. Everything passes away. And there's nothing you can do about it. Absolutely nothing. Try. Prove me wrong. Right? Next time you feel anger, try to keep it. Next time you feel greed, try to keep it. You're trying to hold on to your greed, and then 2 minutes later, you'll be thinking of something completely different. You'll be like, oh, hang on, where did that go? Greed is boring. Right? Try to think about cheesecake. Right? It's really boring. That's why you always have to divert yourself from it. You know, you can't, it's why it's you know, if you want to enjoy a meal, you don't just have a meal by yourself. See, if the meal was important, then you should have a meal by yourself, shouldn't you? So you can actually focus on actually tasting things. But the reality is, tasting things is boring. You have a bite and you know, oh, that's nice. And then you chat with your friend, because actually that's more fun than eating things. So all these things actually are inherently boring. This is the great trick of Mara. Yeah? And Mara is always, there's this word that they use for, it's a bit of a pun that they use in Pali. They have a word called chitra. Chitra meaning various. And it's used for things like say, the many colours of a peacock's tail or something like that. You've got all the bright colours of Justin's little blanket thingy, or it's called chitra, and there's lots of these kind of bright colours in the world, because you remember this is India, right? Yeah, so it's all kind of bright saris and all of these kinds of things, all these things too, and your attention is grabbed, it's taken one thing after another. Yeah, virupa rupe hi matenti chitta, with the Kama hitra himanoroma. So all the things we can experience in the world, they're all very delightful and pleasant. Yeah? But when they change, then the mind gets stressed by that. Rupa rupena matenti chittam. When they change and become other, your mind gets stressed. So this is the nature of those things, that we've always been taken up by these things, looking for one thing, looking for the other. And this is something which I was talking about this the other day with someone after a meeting. He used to work in Sydney, he's now moved to the Blue Mountains, and he's saying how he really kind of notices kind of the impact that just being in the city has. We were walking down the street in North Sydney as it happens, and he was just saying, having been in the mountains now for some time, he really notices what it's like in the city, right? Sights, everything, well, where do I look? Yeah? Advertising, people, and everything grabbing you all the time. So this is one of the things that the Buddha talked about a lot as a preparation for meditation, was called sense restraint. And so sense restraint means just what it sounds like, just being restrained, being moderate with the senses. It doesn't mean that you don't see things, right? And actually this is something that the Buddha was very very critical of, okay? And some people said, you know, to restrain your senses, you can't see things. And you shouldn't hear things, because if you see beautiful sights, your mind will be taken off by it. If you hear beautiful sounds, and your mind will be taken off by those things. And the Buddha said, well, if that's true, then a blind man will be full of wisdom, and a deaf man will be enlightened. Because you're not hearing anything. That would be very easy, wouldn't it? We could all just get those headphones, noise-cancelling headphones, and walk around the streets of Sydney with those on all the time. We could never hear anything. And then we could meditate very happily. That's not what the Buddha meant by sense restraint. Yeah? So sense restraint is always, everything in Buddhism is always led by understanding. Right? Understanding what these things are. Understanding, oh, look, when I see this kind of sight, then it takes my mind in that way, it affects me in this way. This I find pleasing, this one I find unpleasing, this one I... And so you're understanding how the mind is being pushed and pulled among all of these kinds of things, right? And how that happens in different environments, yeah, and of course in certain environments, of course it's specifically designed in order to do that. And one of the main culprits being shopping malls, right? I'm part of the same walk we did the other day after this meeting. This fellow I was with, he was going to drop me back at the Buddhist library, and he was on an errand. He had to buy a spatula. So anyway, we walked through a shopping mall trying to look for a spatula, right? So, but you know, you just see, it's a very alien environment for me. But you just see how everything is designed, all the shiny surfaces. Yeah? Why are the surfaces shiny? Because the light is coming from somewhere else. Yeah? This is the essence of shiny, isn't it? Right? The light is supposed to be coming from there, but actually it's coming from over there. So you're constantly being deluded about where things are, right? It looks like it's there, but actually it's over there. So this is that aspect of chitra as well. Everything's delusory. Everything's coming at you from different angles. And so this wise, they're specifically designed like that to make you lose your mindfulness. Right? So you walk in there, and then you go, hang on, what was that? Oh, that's nice. So this is that thing of sense restraint, yeah? So it doesn't mean you can't go into a shopping mall, but it just means just understand how these things affect your mind and be mindful about that. Yeah? Remember to keep your focus. Remember, if you're going into that kind of environment, just be aware of that. Know that. Keep your focus. The more that we get pulled out into all of that diversity of things, all of the exciting and thrilling things in the world, then the more that our mind is going to tend to stream out in that way, and the less that we're going to want to be still. Now it's not like an absolute. It's not something you can say your mind should be one way or the other, right? It's not that one is right and one is wrong, but it's a question that you have to find what is the right balance for you, right? We all need both of those things. We all need to engage in the world in one way or another. We all need to talk to people. We all need to do things. Nothing wrong with that. We have to be very, very careful. I have to say that very explicitly, because otherwise people get into this very easy to fall into this trap, right? Where you think, oh, if only I can, you know, go away and meditate and do my retreat and so on, and then I'll be able to find peace. Right? What you need to find is balance. So you need to find that acceptance where you're at peace wherever you are. You're at peace in the shopping mall, you're at peace when you're meditating. And if you think, you know, if you think about it, you know, if you say to yourself, look, when I'm going to do all this work and so on and so forth, and then I'm going to save up enough money and I can go to Burma and I can do this retreat and I'll be there for, you know, 2 months and I can really get into my meditation and I can keep silence and so on and so forth. Right? So you can go and you can do all those things, and that's terrific. And then you get there, what are you going to be thinking of? Well, the first thing is, there's going to be building projects in the monastery. Right? It's not going to be quiet. Why? Because it's Burma. It's not quiet. Right? You're going to be eaten by mosquitoes all the time. Right? You're going to not be able to cope with the food. You're going to have the person next to you. This is supposed to be a silent retreat. And they're talking. How can they be talking? Right? And so on and so forth. And all of these things are going to be happening to you. It's just life. It happens wherever you are. So this is, again, this whole idea of the there and the then. There is no there, there is no then. So if you want to go to Burma, go to Burma and do a retreat. But don't go to Burma and do a retreat because you can't stand where you are now. Be happy where you are now. Be content with where you are now. Be content to be in Sydney. Be content to be in a shopping mall. Be content to be in a marriage or in a job or whatever that you're in. And be as content as possible for that, with doing that. And then, when you get the chance to go on retreat, you'll find you'll also be content there. And you can be content with mosquitoes biting you. Right? Amazing little skeptic on this one. You can be content with the heat. You can be content with the noise. No matter what happens, it's all just another thing. It's all just, you know, this is just this. If there's no there and then, there's only here, there's only now. So, why is one here better than another here? Why is one now better than another now? Right? What more things can the universe give us? You know, one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life was when I was staying in Thailand at a monastery called Puttaparthi, and I was spending the rains retreat. And I was having a really lovely rains retreat. I was really happy. Meditation was going really well. And I just loved staying in that place so much. And it was a very beautiful place. It's high, rocky mountains. Not really high mountains, but like rocky hills. And so I used to walk down and start before dawn and walk down the hill towards to the hall. And then we'd go for alms round in the village. And so because it was dark when we started out, the sun would come up while we were walking down. It'd take about an hour's walk. We'd start in the dark and then it would get light. And about halfway down, this was the rainy season. So the place is very rocky and often very dry. But in the rainy season, there's these, I'm not quite sure how you describe it, but these kind of slightly marshy or mossy grasses that go over like whole fields. And they're just filled with wildflowers. So there's just like fields of pink and purple and yellow wildflowers that just go. There's these little delicate flowers and fields that cross over. And so you have these beautiful rocks and then these fields of wildflowers and these crystal clear streams that come down. So there's these streams of beautiful fresh water flowing down. And it's just a perfect, crisp, clear morning and the sky is very beautiful. And the sun was just coming up. And so on the one side, as I was coming down, you could see just the beautiful sunrise was just coming up. And it was a full moon. And on the other side of the sky, the full moon was just going down. And it was just so beautiful. And I came out of the forest and I came out and I saw all these things. And there's the moon on one side and the sun on the other side. And then there was a rainbow. And I was like, come on. Come on, universe. It's pulling out all the stops now. It's over the top. And so I was like, well, I stood there and I was like, wow, could anything be more beautiful than this? No, it can't be. This is it. Yeah, okay, well, that's enough. Keep going. What can you do at the end of the day? It's just a sight. It's just something you experience. And then the experience ends. And I've seen lots of rubbish tips and broken concrete pavements and all of those things as well. Lots of ugly things and things you don't want to see. They're all gone. They're not part of my reality. You just let them go. So what is this practice that we're doing all about? It's all about doing nothing. It's all about not being in the there, not being in the then, and just being content. If you can be content with what's here and now, if you can be at peace with that, you can be at peace with anything. And if you're going to make war with yourself, you're sitting alone, quietly in a room, and you're going to be at war with yourself. Think about that. What if you're going to be sitting alone quietly by yourself, and you're going to be at war with yourself, what is there that you can't be at war with? If you can't get along with yourself, is there a single person in the world who you're going to be able to get along with? Is there a single situation that you're going to be able to handle peacefully and comfortably? What are you going to have? What's going to happen when the suffering comes and when the problems come? Are you going to say, I'm not going to make a problem out of it? You're just sitting there. You're making problems out of stuff already. Nothing's happening. Right? It's just you. And there's nothing there. And you're making a problem out of it. And you're thinking, why isn't my mind peaceful? If you can't be at peace with that, what can you be at peace with? So this is a great gift that meditation brings us. When you can be at peace with just that, you can be at peace anywhere, anytime, with anyone, or with no one. Okay, so that's my little Dhamma talk for this evening on being at peace. And I offer that for your reflection and amusement.